Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we take a look at waymarking and we speak to Blue Quasar from Canada. We also chat to Pensive Travellers from Newcastle and we tell you about our YouTube GeoCoin competition. Or listen more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 38 of GeoTalk. It's summertime down in the Southern Hemisphere now that December's around and we're coming up to Christmas. And of course, the days are nice and long and the weather's very warm. So most of you are probably out geocaching all weekend or even after work. And I noticed some people are getting involved in the Caching Games Well-Rounded Cacher competition. Now, you've heard me mention this in the past, and if you haven't checked it out, go to cachinggames.com/TWRC. That stands for the Well-Rounded Cacher. And at the moment, there are three competitions running. The major one, which is the 5-5 competition, and that involves finding a cache at each level of difficulty and terrain, and that's 81 in total. Marcus Vitruvius from Victoria is currently leading that competition on 64 out of 81. And one of his close friends, I think it is, DJ Geodog Rascal, is on 55 of 81, and closely followed by Altair from Sydney on 47 of 81. In the 4-4 category, we've got P-Wags out in front on 32 out of 49, with Record Breakers from South Australia on 23 of 49, and Bewilderbeast, who featured on one of the early podcasts, one of the very early Geo Talks. He's from Canberra. He's on 19 of 49. And in the 3-3 category, there's 25 caches you need to find in that one. Red Tag, who we've spoken to, or actually we've seen in the GeoTalk video edition. She's completed her 25 of 25, along with March Brown from Tasmania. And then you've got Urch from WA on 23 of 25, and McFan from the ACT on 19 of 25. So they're the caches that are who are currently leading the packs there. Bit of a shout out to some of the overseas caches. Jennifer QP from Delaware, Fear the Fish from California, Webdad from Alabama, the Greystone Gopher from Virginia, and Corey and Adam from Florida. Congratulations on having a go, because I know it's wintertime up there. And in some of those parts of the world, probably not the ones I just mentioned, maybe Delaware to some extent, it's probably covered in snow. So you're doing well to give it a red hot shot. So check that out, cachinggames.com/TWRC. And just in case you wanted to know, I'm coming second last in the 5-5, but I promise I will catch up soon. Something that I've been meaning to mention for the last couple of podcasts and only just remembered this morning to write it down in my notes is coord.info. Now, this is a way in which you can share coordinates in a URL form, or web, I should say, pages from geocaching's website. So what you do is you type into your browser coord.info, so that's coord.info, and then /, and then you can put the GC number of your cache. So you can put coord.info/GC1528, whatever that cache is, and that will redirect to the geocaches page. Now, you can also do it for travel bugs by putting in coord.info/TB and whatever the travel bugs number is, or you can do it for coord.info/WM for the waymarks that you want to check out, or you want to send in an email to someone. And we're going to be talking about waymarking a little bit later on, but that's an interesting shortcut, coord.info. Give it a go, see how it works for you. Don't forget the planned mega event for Easter 2010 to be held down in Wagga Wagga in southern New South Wales. I'm really excited about this, so I'm going to plan my life around this event come Easter 2010, because even if it doesn't make it to mega event status, I think as most people I've spoken to have said, this is going to be the biggest event, that geocaching event that Australia has ever had. So go to the forum pages, either at the Geocaching Australia forums or the Groundspeak forums, and read up about the information there. And if you're thinking of going, even if you're not quite yet committed to going, but you're just thinking about it, make a mention on those forums forum pages and also include how many are going to be in your party, because the organisers, Riverina Caching, are hoping that they'll be able to demonstrate to Groundspeak in the not-too-distant future that they can get 500 people to that event and therefore make it a mega event status. So check that out. If you're from Australia, come on, make your mind up. See if you can block out some time and head down to Wagga Wagga. And if you're from overseas, what a great excuse to come down under and check out. Or if you're across the ditch in New Zealand, come on over to Australia and check out geocaching down here. Over the past few months, I've been receiving a number of Facebook friend requests. Now, I'm not too sure how you, if you do have a Facebook page, how you handle requests and so forth, but I'm a little bit stingy with mine, and I usually only accept those from people that I've actually met face-to-face or I've been friends with over the internet. So I apologize in advance to anyone that I may have offended in not accepting their friend request, but what I've done instead is I've created a GeoTalk fan page or group. So anyone who wants to join that page, go to facebook.com, type in GeoTalk in the search engine, and you can join the group. And we're going to run a competition in January. I put a question up to all the group members just a week ago, and we've got a few good ideas there. So we might have a bit of a competition and give away a prize during the month of January and maybe even into February. So go to Facebook, check that out. Also, on the subject of social networking on the internet, YouTube, we've been putting a few videos up over the last couple of months of video GeoTalk, and that's at youtube.com/GeoTalk. Now, I'm running a competition on that particular channel. Anyone who subscribes between now and the end of this week, which I think from memory is about the 13th, so yep, the 13th of December, so you got until the end of the day, Sydney time, on the 13th of December to subscribe to the YouTube channel, and you can go into the draw to win an Ernie's GeoCoin. Now, Ernie is fairly well known in GeoCoin circles. He produces quite a few coins from Switzerland, and he's given us a couple of coins to give away. So we've got an Edelweiss one to give away, and depending on how many people enter, I mean, we're already up to, I think, about 45 subscribers. If we can get it a little bit higher, we may even give two away. We might give the cheesy coin away as well. So go to youtube.com/GeoTalk before the end of Saturday the 13th of December and go into the draw to win a GeoCoin. Well, it's time now for the trivia question for this particular episode, and of course the theme's about waymarking, so let's pick something about waymarking. How many waymarks are there in Australia? Fairly simple question. Answer to that at the end of the podcast. A few years ago, Groundspeak removed locationless caches along with virtuals and webcams from their geocaching website. To fill the void that they left, they created a new website called waymarking.com. Now, while it hasn't taken off here in Australia, it certainly has been popular in North America. And one of the more active waymarkers in North America is Blue Quasar. He spoke to the host of the Ontario Geocaching podcast a few months back, and we'd like to thank Jer Bear, the host, for allowing us to replay this bit of audio, which gives you a rundown about what waymarking is all about.
Okay, we're here with Blue Quasar, and we're going to talk about waymarking.
What would you like to know about waymarking?
What's it all about?
Waymarking is the attempt to replace the virtual cache and locationless cache that was pretty much grandfathered in 2005 by Groundspeak. Back then, people were wanting to be able to explore new ways of bringing people to see points of interest and being able to write them up in a way that was interesting and educational. It was very hard back in the days of the virtual cache to determine the wow factor, as it was called. And this opened it up to allow people to be able to decide what they were interested in, as opposed to when it was a virtual cache where it could have been anything. Now everything is categorized and compartmentalized to say if I'm interested in historic sites, they're in this section. If I'm interested in historic plaques, they're in here. If I'm interested in tall towers, they're here. Anything, train stations, all kinds of variety. And basically, if there's something that you're interested in, it either already exists or you're willing or you're able to make it.
So where would you go to find that? Is there a website?
Yes, Groundspeak operates a second website called waymarking.com. Mm-hmm. Your Groundspeak membership that works for geocaching also works on waymarking, mm-hmm. and you just sign in the same way there.
Well, that's neat. I know there was a big outcry when they got rid of the virtuals, right?
There was definitely a big outcry when they got rid of virtuals. A lot of people don't remember all of the problems that happened with virtuals. It started off one way, then it changed to another way, then it changed again. And everybody wants to remember the way they wanted it to be. But the new system with waymarking actually is a much more encompassing method. That way everybody can have what they want, and they can also ignore what they don't want. The categorization and the tools that are available through waymarking definitely allow you to tailor it to your personal experience and your personal enjoyment level. If you like something, you can bring them up instantly. If you don't like something, you can actually say, ignore this entire category. It's actually very similar to the geocaching process. You create your waymark listing just like you would do a geocache listing. It is sent off to a group of reviewers that have expertise in that area, and they would look it over to make sure it meets the requirements for the category. Basically, it's just a general description along with a photograph of the area, and encourage people to come and see it. As of 2 months ago, there was more than 100,000 unique waymarks listed across the world. Waymarking has been growing in leaps and bounds over the past 2 years, and it's just snowballing. There is quite the photography aspect to it, especially when it comes to, you know, points of interest. And you really want to market your waymark well. Like, it's not like a geocache where you're bringing somebody to any spot. You want to show off why you want to come and see this. Uh-huh. And definitely adding photography is almost a requirement, but it's not always.
Yeah. And with regards to permission?
When it comes to waymarking and permissions to take photographs or even to record the coordinate data for a location, the rule of thumb is actually local laws apply. For the most part, any location can be waymarked, unlike with geocaching where you have to, you know, receive permission to place your physical item. If the public is allowed to be at this spot, you can waymark it. There's a lot of places where you can take pictures, like right from the public sidewalk. You can take a picture of almost anything you want. Mm-hmm. You can write up any description just like you would any other normal website.
What about icons?
Waymarking actually has a much more advanced system of icons for its categories. Every category has its own unique icon. So the people that love to collect icons on geocaching, because realistically there's only about 15 you can collect unless you get into travel bugs. With waymarking, I've got well over 300 different icons in my profile. It's a challenge to try to fill up and get, you know, collect more and more icons. Uh-huh. It also opens your exposure to other things that you might not have been aware of. You know, if I'm looking, if a new category comes up and says, you know, relocated train stations, I'll go look for one so I can get that icon. It increases my awareness of what's around me.
So it does take you to places that you probably wouldn't normally go to.
It does take you to places you don't know about, and it also gives you a, hey, there's something I do know about and I'd like to share with other people. Right now, waymarking is in a build strategy. It's not really in a an activity strategy yet, so they're wanting to create a database full of entries. Waymarking hasn't caught on quite as quickly as geocaching is right now. Uh-huh. If we went back 6 years ago when geocaching started, that's pretty much where we are with waymarking. Mm-hmm. It's just getting underway and people are starting to discover it, but a lot of people are already well established into their geocaching. So it does apply to geocaching, but it also is for a different set of people that don't really want to go hiking in the woods. They just want to be shown interesting things that they can visit.
Beautiful.
Once again, thank you to Jerry, also known as Jer Bear, the host of Ontario Geocaching Podcast, for that bit of audio. You can check out his podcast by going to ontariogeocaching.podomatic.com.
Geocache Radio.
Are you interested in geocaching? Do you understand Dutch? The first and only geocaching podcast completely in Dutch. Want to find out more? Find us at www.geocacheradio.com. See you there.
Well, continuing the theme of waymarking in this episode of GeoTalk, we're going to head up to the Hunter Valley and chat with Jason from the Pensive Travellers. How are you going, Jason?
Hey, good, thanks, Darren. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. And I'm excited because I've found someone who's right into this area of, I suppose it's it's a cousin of geocaching called waymarking. Now, tell me, first of all, are you a geocacher or a waymarker?
I consider myself predominantly a geocacher, but I certainly do enjoy the waymarking.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been geocaching and waymarking for?
Since about April this year.
Okay.
For both. Yeah.
And you were saying that you've gotten into the geocaching in a fairly big way, although I would say that for most newbies, you're pretty much on par. How many finds do you have roughly at the moment?
Currently, I've got 241 GC finds and about 44 GCA finds.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find out about geocaching?
One of my mates at work introduced me to it in late March, early April this year, and sort of just taken off from there. We have a bit of a competition amongst ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, what sort of drew you to waymarking? Because a lot of geocachers that I speak to sort of stay clear of it, think that, you know, it's all about the box at the end. I mean, why have you turned to this field?
Well, I find the difference between geocaching and waymarking is that waymarking gets you to go to places and actually look at something. For me in particular, I enjoy visiting war memorials with the defence background that I've got. I find that particular part of it very interesting, and that's certainly the concentration of my waymarks. If you look at my categories through my profile, you'll find that the largest percentage of waymarks are in that sort of category with war memorials and that kind of thing. But yes, obviously I dabble in some of the others as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever sort of bumped into other geocachers and discussed waymarking or had been able to convince others to take it up?
I only really discuss it with the few mates that I know that currently do geocaching. Unfortunately, not a lot of them have the same opinion as me about waymarking, which is unfortunate because I think it's definitely worth the look.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the pros then of waymarking, some of the reasons why you think a geocacher should consider it?
As you said earlier, the find with the geocacher is good, and I certainly do enjoy that part. But with waymarking, it's more about visiting the place rather than finding something at the end. You get to see a lot of interesting sites. I've got a fair few waymarks in Sydney, a lot in Adelaide, obviously a lot around the Hunter Valley area, Newcastle, Maitland area. And because of that, I've seen a lot more of the areas that I've been to on top of what the geocaching does.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you've got a few around the country, and I think you said you've got about 200 finds. How many waymarks have you set up so far?
Currently, I'm sitting on 209 waymarks, but they're the ones that I've actually published. I've got some in reserve sitting in my little folder here on my computer waiting for me to get around to putting them up on the website.
Okay. And do you have many people finding them?
Yeah, they come in spits and starts. Mainly, I found foreign visitors. In particular, I had a couple from New Zealand that visited Sydney a couple of months ago, and they hit pretty much all of my Sydney waymarks. And just recently, in the last week or so, I've had another pair of foreign visitors coming and hitting all my waymarks in Adelaide, which is good to see.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you're quite interested in the war memorials that are around the country. What other sort of categories have you set up waymarks with?
Currently, there's 814 different categories in waymarks, and I've hit about 95 of them. There are some silly categories, I'll admit that, with waymarking. For instance, things like 7-Elevens and McDonald's and Burger Kings and things like that. Just so I can sort of tick one off, I do those kinds of waymarks. As I said, I'll admit they're a little bit silly, but also I do a lot of look a lot of museums and sculptures and all that kind of stuff. Certainly in the Adelaide area, in the CBD of Adelaide, I was really surprised at how many statues of historic figures, both of Australian history as well as monarchs. It's all sorts of statues of all different people from the last 200-odd years of history of Australia. It's very interesting to find out all the information.
One of the criticisms of waymarking might be that you have to put a bit of effort into the write-up, but obviously you don't have to create a cache. So, I mean, what do you find is more difficult in doing, setting up a geocache or setting up a waymark?
I find actually setting up a geocache to be more difficult for myself. I think that's a personal thing, though. I'm a bit of a generic sort of information buff, trivia kind of buff. So for me, the waymarking is good because I get to learn general knowledge and that kind of stuff. Whereas I find finding locations that won't get muggled, for instance, I find very difficult for geocaching.
Mm-hmm. So have there been cases where you've gone to a place and you thought that would be great for a geocache and then realised you can't hide them and instead turn it into a waymark?
Yeah, that has happened on the odd occasion, but it's kind of strange. I actually keep the two, whilst they're obviously related, the two activities, I kind of keep them separated in my, I compartmentalise, I guess, in my mind. If I'm on the track for waymarking or for a day or whatever, I won't sort of think so much about, oh, that'd be a nice place to hide a cache. Mm-hmm. Similarly, on a day where I'm out caching, I won't necessarily think about waymarking.
Have you created any categories yourself, or are you thinking of there are categories out there that you'd like to create that might be specific to Australian locations?
Yep, actually I've created a group on the waymaking website. It's called Australian Waymarkers. I currently have three officer members and I think two other members. And the category that I've put up, I haven't published it yet, but the category was Boer War Memorials, because obviously that's largely Australian. However, through a bit of research, I've also found that countries like Canada also participated in the Boer War down in South Africa.
Are there any aspects of waymarking that you'd like to see changed or improved?
The geocaching website's good because it allows you to do your queries, obviously once you become a financial member and all that kind of stuff. That kind of thing isn't as well developed on the waymarking website. Even the GCA website is better in a lot of respects than the waymarking website because you're able to set up, different queries and all that kind of stuff. And the waymarking website certainly needs a little bit of work in that respect.
All right, well, before I let you go, there's a few sort of thorny questions that I wanted to get your view on because I've seen these pop up in the waymarking forums. The first one regards the multiple listing of a location, and in a great example of this is the Sydney Opera House, where it appears as opera houses and odd-shaped buildings, and then I can't remember all the categories. What's your view on creating a waymark with multiple categories?
Well, I can't. There's no problem in my mind with creating a waymark with multiple categories. There's two ways to look at it. I mean, obviously, you're out there to see the location to start with. If there happens to be multiple categories that location fits under, I don't see any harm in being able to log that, or indeed the same person creating multiple hides for the same location under the hides side of the house as well.
Mm-hmm. Another sort of thorny question is if someone created a waymark under a category today, say for Sydney Airport, and then you had already been there, say, a month or two or a year before, would you log that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not that you visited the place. For me, it's not that you visited the place since the hide was given under that category. It's the fact that you've actually visited that place at some point in your life. It also depends on the instructions for that category. If it states that you must have a picture of your GPS receiver at that location, then, of course, I don't log that unless I do actually go there for that specific purpose. But if the category instructions just state that it has to be a picture of the location or a picture of you at the location, which a lot of people do on their holidays and things like that, I don't see any problem with you being able to log that as a visit.
And one other one, and this is one that sort of generates a bit of debate I've seen, and I've never seen a definitive answer, is would you log your own Waymark?
Generally, I don't. And the reason why that is because there's no point having a hide and a find for the same thing, unless, of course, you've hidden under a category the same Waymark that's been hidden under a different category. That's, of course, a difference. So whilst you're visiting or logging a visit at that location, you're just not logging it in the category in which you've created. Also, some category owners or managers actively request that you log your own hides. There's one category in which I've got several hides that I have actually logged because that's what the category managers have requested, you know, or asked that, you know, you've been there before. You've obviously been there to do the hide, so you may as well log it as a find as well.
Well, look, we've covered a lot of ground, and I thank you very much for your time, Jason, and hopefully, you know, we might find a few of each other's waymarks over the next few months and encourage a few more geocaches to take up this new and emerging pastime.
Absolutely. I think it's well worth it.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Darren.
Now to whip around the country and have a look at some of the events that are occurring around the latter part of December. On the 15th of December, down in Hobart is the Geocaching 101 and Christmas Barbecue. Up in Brisbane is City Tripping 2008 being held by Cal D. And thanks very much for the note to remind us to give that one a plug. So check that out up in Bris Vegas. On the 21st of December is the Leaving Christmas Caches Behind in Ulverston, up in northern part of Tasmania. And also on the 21st is the Caches from Across the Ditch being held in Canberra. On the 22nd of December is the Christmas SECS by the Lake down at Mount Gambier in South Australia. And also on that date up in the capital in Adelaide is the Christmas Pub Lunch, which is lunch number 20. On the 27th of December is Santa's Sack being held at Brisbane Airport. On the 28th of December, Intervening Days down in Melton, down west of Melbourne, and I'll be attending that one. Looking forward to meeting some of the local western Melbourne caches down at that event. And on New Year's Eve, on the 31st of December, is the Enoa Ra, which is being held in Arnfield in Sydney. Now, three of those events, the Caches Across the Ditch, the Santa Sack, and the Enoa Ra, and I apologise if I pronounce that incorrectly, my Maori isn't too good, they're involving a group of New Zealand geocaches being headed by Red Iguana, who are heading around the country. So if you bump into that group, say g'day to them, or as they say, they're kia ora, and wish them all the best on their trip around the country. I have a feeling maybe they might be trying to break another record, seeing as though that it's already Kiwi Group holds our most caches in a day found. So keep your eye out for them. Time now to have a look at the GeoTalk mailbag, and we got quite a few emails over the last couple of weeks. The first one I'm going to read out, it came all the way from Oklahoma over in the US. It comes from Troy, who's part of the World GeoGathering staff, which are holding a huge event, which is going to be held in Oklahoma on the 16th to the 19th of July in 2009, so that's next year. It's going to be over 4 days, and it's going to involve vending, event meet and greets, fun and games, classes, seminars. There'll be an exclusive cache race, and there'll be more than 100 event-only caches going to be placed at that event. So I'm going to give you a link in the show notes to some more information about that, but check that out, particularly if you're heading over to the US come the middle of the year in July, and you're heading over in that part of the world over to Oklahoma. A big thank you to SG3, who I caught up with when I was down in Hobart. He wanted to, first of all, say that he enjoyed meeting up with me and was glad that I didn't have a chipmunk voice, because apparently he listens to the podcast at about 1.5 times its normal speed so he can squeeze it in on his trip to work. You know, there's an alternative. You could live in Sydney and you could probably listen to about 3 or 4 podcasts in that particular time span. But he's also sent me in the mail a DVD, which is part of a hint pack for his Men in Black Holes cache. And I'm looking forward, I'm going to check that out this week and have have a look at what that involves, because from all accounts, from all the Southern Tasmanian and Tasmanian geocaches, they all say that SG3 has some of the best puzzles. So look out Secret Squirrel, look out Zitherin. Looks like you've got some competition down there in the Southern Island State. Also, an email from Gypsy Keisha, known as Greg. Just wanted to ask whether or not the podcast can be available on CD. Thanks very much for that question. And I think that's probably a good idea. What we might do over the next few weeks is we'll put it up on the website before the end of the year. People can purchase, if they like, just for the cost of postage, really, a CD with all the programs recorded on it. And that will save you having to download it if you're finding that's a hassle. So thanks very much for that, Greg. We'll take that idea on board. And finally, we got a call on the GeoTalk hotline. Now, don't forget, you put this into your mobile phone. That way it's easier to remember. It's 02-800-50436. It's from our good friend Pagel Boy down there in Wollongong. He just wants to give a plug for a little audio podcast that he's got running. Looks like I've got some competition. Here's Pagel Boy.
Hi, it's Pagel Boy here. I just wondered if you'd like to do an interview for my new show, Casey with Jar. Yeah, well, see ya. Love your show.
Thanks for that, Pagel Boy. You can check out his podcast. I'll give you a link in the show notes. And don't forget to check out our website at geotalkpodcast.com. There's also links for all the notes relating to this show and past shows and to other podcasts that are around the world. So check out geotalkpodcast.com. Well, that's all for this edition of GeoTalk. Before we go, a few things. The answer to the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, how many waymarks are there in Australia? Now, this actually took me a while because I had quite a few categories on my ignore list and I had to uncheck every one of them to find out what the total is in Australia. And the answer is 733. So there's quite a few out there, and 66 of those are Australian trig points. So if you enjoyed doing That's the Trig, back when there was a locationless caches on the geocaching website, then try that one out. There's 66 at the moment, and there's certainly room for many hundreds more. And if you want to find out more about waymarking, obviously you've got the waymarking.com website and the forums that go along with that. But another great website to check out is Wayward Waymarking. So that's www.waywardwaymarking.com. Check that one out. It's got some great articles and tips and tricks and a few tools that you can download to help you get into your waymarking adventures. Well, that's all for this episode of GeoTalk. In our next episode, we're going to put on the board shorts and the tank top, and we're going to head up to Cairns up in far north Queensland. And we're also going to announce the winner of the YouTube GeoCoin competition. Until next time, safe geocaching.